Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 152, recorded Wednesday, the 9th of February, 2011. FosDem.
Floss Weekly is brought to you by MailRoute for all your email spam and virus protection. Visit MailRoute.info and get a 10% discount for the life of your account.
Hello and welcome to Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I'm your host for this week. My name is Dan Lynch, and I'm sitting in for the regular host, Randall Schwartz. As you'll notice, we sound slightly different. And it's actually something of a British takeover of the show today. Beware, the Brits are coming. But I am also joined by Simon Phipps over in, he's actually in the same country as me, in Southampton. Simon, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you, Dan. Our international listeners may not be aware, but Southampton is as far from Liverpool as San Jose is from San Francisco, well, almost. And yet it feels like you're in another country up there. We don't necessarily feel as closely affiliated as we may look on the map.
No. And routing your local calls via the other side of the world also probably doesn't help you to feel any more closely located. But so it's great to have you back on. And we've had a last minute change of plan. We were due to be joined by Dan Walsh from Red Hat, who was going to talk to us about SE Linux, which is what I've been trailing in previous weeks and so on. I'm not sure what's actually happened to Dan. We can't seem to get him online at the moment, so apologies for that. So we're going to actually talk about the events of the last weekend and FosDem more specifically, which is the it's the Free Open Source Developers European Meeting, and it's been going about 10, 11 years now. It's probably, I would say, the biggest open source or free software event in Europe, certainly. Thousands of geeks there, lots of great keynote speakers, lots of great dev rooms, a real kind of community event, and certainly the largest community event that I've seen, anyway. It makes a refreshing change.
It's up there with linux.conf.au is a big conference down in Australia. And then down in Brazil, they have FISLE, which is the free software event for Latin America. And those three together are of similar size, between 3,000 and 5,000 attendees, and typically attended by very well-known decision makers, code developers, committers, and also by politicians and national decision makers as well, which is an interesting dimension you don't always see.
Yeah, I mean, one of the virtues of being in Brussels, as we say, is it's the home of the European Parliament. So hopefully it gives us a chance to get some involvement with that. And one of the interesting things about FosDem, I found, considering the size of it, is that they managed to keep the event free, as in free as in beer and free as in speech, but free as in beer to enter anyway. There's no cover charge to get into the event, and they managed to keep everything going through merchandise sales and sponsorship and things like that. It's quite impressive.
So it's very interesting going there. I used to attend there as a Sun Microsystems employee, and Sun used to sponsor the conference by having me go and actually pay cash at the desk in FosDem. So it's a very relaxed event with very relaxed approach to organization, and yet well sponsored by corporations and incredibly well attended by open source projects. I think that comes out in the discussion that we had while we were waiting for our guest.
Yeah, that's true, and it's a good job you didn't mention that at the time, that you used to pay with cash in Brussels. You'd be getting strange people following you around if they think you've got that much cash on you. We should mention, on the subject of sponsors, we have a sponsor this week for the show, which is MailRoute.info. Now, being a being a British chap, I would say mailroute.info, but for the purpose of this, I would say mailroute because I know that's the way it's done over there. So in case you don't know, mailroute is a way of filtering out spam from your email. And as it says here, it's a secure hosted service that filters virus and spam for companies of any size. Whether you're a single user or a company with tens of thousands of employees, mailroute can eliminate viruses, spam, reduce the load on your email server, lower your costs, and make your email usable again. Typical MailRoute customers see a 95% reduction in their inbound email volume with virtually no false positives. Leo uses MailRoute. He loves it. He's been using it for 6 years. And recently, Tom Merritt has also joined and started using MailRoute and found that he's able to use email domains that he'd long given up on in the past because of the problems with spam, obviously, which is very cool. Tom Johnson, the founder and CEO of MailRoute, started one of the very first companies in this market back in 1998, which was called FrontBridge, and FrontBridge was later acquired by Microsoft, and Microsoft still offer that service as part of their Microsoft Exchange hosted services line. But Tom wasn't finished there, and he went on to start MailRoute, his next generation service for filtering email with a high level of accuracy and a low price that's unmatchable. So if you want to find out more about MailRoute and you want to get involved, you can go to mailroute.info to sign up. And as a Twit listener, you receive a 10% discount for the life of your account. Small business accounts start from $2. $2 per user per month for up to 10 users. And because of the demand from the Twit Army, MailRoute have now added a new personal service for individual users. And you can get that for $30 per user per year for single users. And if you can find out more at mailroute.info, very simple. Go there, sign up, and liberate your email from spam. Cool. So now that we've covered the sponsorship angle, we should join our earlier discussion about FOSDEM and find out more about that. Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, just in case you don't know, FOSDEM is It's the free open source developers European meetup. That's right, isn't it? FOSDEM. There we go.
I'll get it right. Pretty eventually. Close. Yes.
I always get that wrong. I kind of get it messed up. I'm sure it's free open source developers European meeting. Yeah, it's held in Brussels every year, and it's 3,500 geeks, something like that. 4,000 geeks
more,
all coming
more
together.
More than that, I think. Actually, I think they've peaked at 5,000 at one point. No idea what it was this year, and there's really no way of finding out because the event's completely free, and there's no registration, so you can just turn up and walk in, and so there's really no way of knowing how many people were there.
Yeah, I mean, it was very crowded, though. I mean, I everywhere you tried to walk, there was like 10 people in the way, and you'd have to kind of take half an hour to fight your way through. And you did a talk in the free Java room, which was actually I couldn't get into because it was that popular that they locked the doors. It was a fire safety hazard or something to get more people in there. So
yeah, it was already well over the fire limit when I started, and there was a line of 50 or so people outside the room wanting to come in. I don't think they wanted to hear me speak, really. I think it was all to hear Stephen O'Grady from Redmonk talking about whether Java was finished. I think that was what they all really wanted.
Oh, right, cool. So did it go okay?
I think it went well, yes. We had some great talks in the Java room. There was a very interesting talk. There's a guy there who is porting Android to Linux so that you can run Android apps on your Linux desktop.
That's quite cool.
That's a project called Iced Robot. You want to go look out for that. And then The Libre Java community is busy porting Java Web Start over to Linux so that you don't have to live without Java Web Start if you are going to use the Libre version of Java. So that was exciting as well. And then the Oracle guys were there talking about the Java roadmap as well. If you've been following Java at all, Oracle announced the new governance for OpenJDK last week. And it's caused a certain amount of negative reaction, shall we say, in the community. And so that was a very hotly debated topic in the Java room.
Yeah, it's very kind of, I believe there were some hot debates in there that I unfortunately missed out on quite a few of them. But I did spend most of Sunday, I think, in the Free Java Dev Room with Tom Marble and some of the other guys in there. And I saw B. Dale Garvey talking about his, what's it called? I'm going to get it wrong now. Altus Metrum, I think it's called, his project to measure his homemade rockets, his... he makes rockets and, you know, fires them up and he wants to use open source. He's writing his own open source software and also using open hardware to create a little board which will measure things like altitude and, you know, maybe GPS and things like that on there. And he's using Java for that, which is cool. So one thing I've learned about Brussels, as far as I can tell, I mean, I have to confess that my first time at Brussels, I'm not a FOSDEM veteran like Simon, but I did notice that you can't seem to move anywhere. That place is so packed, even in the bars and things in the middle of the town. There's always about 50 people trying to cram into enough space for 10 people.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there were some places that were less busy when I was looking at them. I'm probably getting into terrible trouble for saying it, but you know, I wandered past the mono room and there weren't a lot of people in there. Maybe it was a break or something.
That's true.
I'd be interested in what other rooms you went in, Dan, because I visited the LibreOffice room as well, which was getting a pretty good attendance, and I'd be happy to run through the stuff that happened in there.
Yeah, I mean, I checked out some of the embedded dev room. I was interested in, there was a talk on Migo in there, which I've been trying to follow lately. I was sent, I don't think I've talked about this on the show, but I was sent a few Migo netbooks by Intel partly to give out on our show, Linux Outlaws, but also to review Migo 1.1 and see how it's going. So I've been trying out on the netbook and I found some rough edges that I shared with the Migo guys. Overall, I think it's looking very positive. I want to see how Nokia are doing on their end of things. So I'm at the moment negotiating with some Nokia people to come on and talk about that. What other rooms did you go in apart from the Free Java Dev Room then, Simon?
So I went and visited the LibreOffice room. You'll recall that LibreOffice is the new name for OpenOffice.org. Community has got together, started a new project. Very interesting. Had all the founders of that project together talking about their rationale behind it. I also went down to the auditorium and heard Michael Meeks from Novell explaining why he personally felt that the starting LibreOffice was necessary, talking about the difficulty that he'd had contributing. And in particular, he was showing very interesting statistics about how once they got rid of the contributor agreement and started the LibreOffice project, the number of contributions from the community shot straight through the roof, with contributions of all sizes coming in, lots of small contributions coming in, but also one or two significant contributions. Like, for example, the new version of LibreOffice has a proper SVG editor in it at last. And the new version of LibreOffice has got the presenter console shipped as a default, so you don't have to go along and add it in later. So they're already making great progress, and they're only really a couple of months old. He was talking also about how they devoted quite a lot of their time to fixing the build environment. So one of the big problems on OpenOffice.org was that the build environment was so complex, and the code was so CRUD infested with commented out code that was decades old and comments in random languages, that they felt that the first thing they ought to do was go tidy the code up, tidy the build environment. And they now have a project well underway to simplify the build environment and shrink the size of the code. And that, too, is leading to people joining the developer community and joining in with contributions.
Excellent. Sounds good. I don't know if you noticed, but they actually put the LibreOffice stand and the OpenOffice stand right next to each other in the main corridor, and I believe that may have caused some interesting conversations to happen during the event.
I think that everyone there is pretty good humoured. I didn't notice any fistfights breaking out. It was fairly easy to identify the people who were from the LibreOffice stand because they were all wearing these green hoodies. So they looked like a legion of digital monks all in green, going cowled down to lead the faithful into the new direction.
Mm, Yeah. It's an interesting thing that happens at these events. Often you get projects who maybe in public might not be perceived as being the best of friends kind of pushed into a small room together. And to be fair, I don't think I've ever seen any real animosity between any projects. I think, you know, overall, I may be biased, but I think as a kind of free open source software community, we generally get along when we need to.
Yeah, well, this was one of my points that I in the talk that I did in the Libre Java room, I was giving my talk about the lessons that I learned making Java into free software when I was at Sun. And one of the lessons that I was telling people was how important it is for human beings occasionally to meet each other, how your electronic conversations that you have on IRC or on instant messaging, they support your real human relationships. And if you never have the time to actually meet each other, drink beer together, eat food together, there's a risk that the conversation spirals out of control and becomes very toxic. And I think one of the great things that FOSDEM does for free software is provide a place where people get to know each other and become better friends and are able to realize that maybe it's just a misunderstanding of communication rather than an intentional insult when bad things happen.
And it's amazing how different people often, as you say, how different people communicate in face to face as to, you know, as opposed to in email or in forums and chat rooms and things. And I've noticed that myself. I met quite a few Linux Outlaws listeners at the event, and it's interesting to see the kind of the difference of how they communicate. How they communicate with me, say via the chat room and stuff, and how are they much quieter and more kind of. I don't know. I don't know what the word is, but they're much kind of quieter and controlled in real life. I think perhaps the anonymity of having something like an IRC channel where you can have a handle that could be nothing to do with your real name, all that kind of stuff. It does enable a sort of a more controversial way of communicating. I think it's good, as you say, to get people in one room and kind of communicate face to face.
The other thing you discover is that most geeks are really quite nice people when you get around to drinking with them, and I think that's a good thing. Hey, I've got a toy I ought to show you that I got. I don't know whether you saw Jan Vilderboer from Red Hat on the Fedora.
I did.
Stand.
I know Jan very well. Yeah,
and he was giving out these, so I now have
you got a transnational.
I have got now my transnational passport here. That shows that I'm a citizen of the Transnational Republic. You can probably just see it. I shouldn't show it on screen for too long because it's full of confidential information.
Yeah, I was going to say,
some of which is even true.
Wow, okay. Yeah, just as a bit of background for anyone who doesn't know, Jan works at Red Hat. And I first met Jan a few years ago at Linux Tag in Berlin. He's a great guy, and he works in Munich in the Red Hat office there doing the inductions for new employees and stuff like that. But one of his other jobs is to lobby at the European Parliament and so on. And his latest kind of project, I suppose, is which is not Red Hat affiliated, as far as I know. I should say before we get out into trouble. There is he's trying to create a new passport for the people basically living online, essentially. So yeah, he's calling it the transnational ID card. I think it is
a transnational republic. You're saying so?
Concept, transnational republic.
I'm going to put the link to that into the chat so that people who are watching live can see it. Maybe it'll show up somewhere else as well. The idea is that it's to start having aggregations of people that are not geographic, that are based on your interest group. And so a transnational republic is this idea to start a cascading affiliated set of people who are it's kind of like Cory Doctorow's book, if you've read his book Eastern Standard Tribe, where he asserts that people are associated more by time zone than they are by geography. Transnational republic is the political association for Eastern Standard Tribe.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I unfortunately never got time to grab a card myself. I was too busy running around. But it's interesting how this kind of relates to the whole key signing thing, which is very big at FOSDEM. There's a massive queue of people all the way down the road queuing up to sign each other's keys. And the whole web of trust thing, which I was talking there. Tom Marble was actually telling me about that. And I was outed as a I don't know what the word is, a kind of a faux geek in some ways. I was sat at dinner with Bidel Garbi and Tom Marble and some other people, and Tom said, "Will you sign my key?" And I had to admit that I didn't have a key at the moment. Yeah, there was some shaking of heads and so on. But it kind of almost relates to that, the whole web of trust. So, you know, I vouch for who you are and you can vouch for me, and that kind of exponentially can be expanded, I suppose.
So did you go along to Eben Moglen's keynote?
I did.
It would be good to tell on that subject of freedoms. It's probably worth relaying a bit of that keynote, Dan.
Mm. Yeah, Eben Moglen, who is the head of the Software Freedom Law Center in New York, I've done some work with in the past. He gave the opening keynote for FOSDEM, and his talk was broadly about many of the kind of problems we have now with liberty on the internet and freedom of speech and so on, in relation particularly to things that have happened recently in Tunisia and Egypt, where in Egypt the government effectively tried to cut the citizens off the internet to stop them from communicating, which is obviously a problem. And I mean, I suppose the way I kind of interpreted most of what Eben was saying, and I certainly don't want to put words into his mouth anyway, but it seemed to me as though he's advocating an alternative internet, or darknet, as some people may call it, which couldn't be cut off by, you know, a central service provider or something, a mesh networking he's talking about as well.
Yes, he's got this idea of a box that you can plug in that hosts your part of the internet, so that you're not reliant on people who are not under your control to host those things about identity. It links in a little bit into some of the ideas that the VRM folks have had. That's the vendor relationship management people have had about the you keeping your identity and your personal information and licensing it or delivering it partially just to the people who need it. And I thought that Eben's ideas flowed into that quite well as well.
Yeah, and he's just, I think, a couple of days before FOSDEM actually launched the Freedom Box Foundation, where they aim to promote this and, as he said, kind of make hardware that people can use easily enough at home, that someone can just take it home, plug it into their, you know, phone connection or internet connection, and get something out of it in order to kind of create this mesh network. It's an interesting idea, but obviously, at some point, that network will have to be connected to the larger internet. So I suppose we could still be cut off from the wider internet. But if our network were self-contained to some degree, we'd at least have peer-to-peer communication.
Right. What's more, if you've got lots of people who are in close proximity and are using mesh networking, being cut off from the internet is much harder. It's no longer the decision of President Mubarak to cut you off. Mm. It's now the decision of all of your neighbors to isolate you. And that's a much harder thing for a central authority to decide to execute on. So it isn't even the idea that you've got lots of big upstream connections. It's the idea that you're connected to all of your neighbors with whom you have human relationships. And it's the idea of an internet which is based on a web of trust. And I think that's the thing that really makes it appeal to me.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to keep harping on the same point, but it goes back to the whole key signing thing. And and as you say, the web of trust and all of that. I think it's very interesting. I think there are some challenges that Eben kind of glossed over, like the hardware. How do we get the hardware? How do we make it affordable? I'm not a hardware guy, so I don't know how easy that is. But it'd be interesting to see how they try and solve that problem of making a box and getting it mass produced and also distributing it as well. It should be interesting.
Well, so one of the dimensions to that as well, one of the other people there was John Phillips from Identica and from StatusNet. Shows up at these events, and he's very good for buying his beer and being a hospitable host. One of the things that's interesting about John that not a lot of people are aware of is that he's also interested in free hardware. One of the devices that he's come up with is a device that can act as part of that mesh network. So I don't think that the hardware necessarily needs to be a huge problem for us, as long as we've got enthusiastic entrepreneurs like John who can take the community's vision forward.
Yeah, John's very involved with Hackspaces as well, or the Hackspace movement, and setting up free Hackspaces, which is something I've had a limited involvement with here in Liverpool and in other places. There's actually a Hackspace in Manchester, which is, for those not familiar with UK geography, is about I don't know, 40 miles from Liverpool. It takes about an hour in a car, a little under an hour. They have a really interesting project going on there called Mad Lab, which is a fantastic name. I forget what it stands for, Manchester something something laboratory, something digital laboratory. But I think they just like the Mad Lab acronym, to be honest. But yeah, they've got a community space there which can be used by different groups to from things like log groups to meet there. And there's a Drupal user group that meets there, which I attend sometimes. And they also have a free hardware hacking space that people can get into and get involved with things like Arduino, get the circuit boards out, get the soldering irons and stuff like that. And I think that's a really interesting thing because not many people get enough chance to really talk about, to really get involved with hardware hacking. It's difficult. So being able to go somewhere where they've already got some equipment and maybe there's somebody there who can talk to you, that would be really cool.
Yeah, actually, there's one of those hack spaces just starting up here in Southampton, where I live,
and
looking forward to seeing what comes of that. I don't know if you got downstairs in the annex building at Fosdem and saw all of the hardware that was on display, because there was actually a really big hack culture at Fosdem as well, with people with not just Arduinos and FPGAs, but also people with complete motherboard designs and all sorts of interesting embedded devices, playthings. There was a whole hacker culture there doing hardware hacking too.
Mm. Did you see any of the Panda board, I think they were calling it? Did I get that right? Panda board. The ones they were showing actually not far from the Free Java Dev Room over in... I talked to some people a couple of years ago about the Beagle board, which uses the OMAP, which used the OMAP 3 processor, and it was all open hardware. Very cool. They were doing a demo by showing Big Book Bunny, which is the Creative Commons, one of the Blender Open Movie Project movies. And they were showing that off this little board, which would fit in like a cigarette packet or something. And they're very cheap and they're trying to get people to use that. But they've brought out an even better one now, or a newer model, I should say, called the Panda board. I don't know where they get the names, but I think that they sound quite cool. And that's got a dual-core processor on it with more than a gig of power in each core. It's got a HDMI output on it, and they were running a whole kind of video wall off it. That was really impressive.
Very, very exciting. And then around the other side of the annex building, there were all of the telephone people. So there was SIP Communicator. They've got a fantastic-looking piece of software that runs on any platform that provides you with video conferencing, audio, and SIP chat, and that's all embeddable code. And then there were the guys from Free Switch around the front as well, who are very interesting people. The Free Switch project is producing a voice over IP telephony switch, which has been built from the ground up to be much easier to configure than Asterisk, and also to have a much easier and broader support for codecs. And they've made amazing progress in the last year on FreeSwitch. I was talking to Michael Bielski, who has a German voice over IP company, and he was explaining to me just how strong FreeSwitch is now.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I've always wanted to look at, because I think we talked about this before, particularly when I had the Big Blue Button as one of the guest projects on Floss. Looking for a really, really good open source alternative to Skype, I think, is something that would be really useful for a lot of people. And I hopefully things like FreeSwitch can be a big part of that.
So I've been chatting with Michael about this. He's been very interested in trying to get more and more of us using it. He's something of a contrarian as well. He prefers to run it on Illumos, which you know is the fork of OpenSolaris. And he says he gets much better performance on there. It's much more stable. I'm sure there is a great argument to be had there, and maybe a showdown between FreeSwitch on Linux, FreeSwitch on Illumos, to try and get the two things working better.
That would be really interesting. Yeah, maybe we could get some benchmarks or as you say, some kind of showdown between the two, because I think it would be really interesting. There's quite a lot of Linux distributions now which are aimed at being an out-of-the-box kind of PBX system that you can just install. I know that they've had some guests on Floss, in fact, in the past, before my involvement with Floss, where I was a listener, and then I heard some stuff about that, which is very interesting. So one of the other things I wanted to kind of mention, which was a big event for me that happened at FOSDEM, was there was a new release of Debian, actually, on the Saturday night of FOSDEM.
And, yeah, how often does that happen?
Well, every 2 years or so now, they reckon. It averages every 2 years. And I had a good word with Zach, who's the, I can't pronounce his full name, but with Zach, who's the current Debian project leader. And we actually ended up stuck on a bus together trying to get back into the center of Brussels. And when I say stuck on a bus, there was about, I don't know, 100 people on this bus, and we were all kind of squashed in like sardines. Unfortunately, I ended up squashed next to this guy who I didn't actually know at the time. And we started talking because we were basically, you know, you didn't have much choice when you're in that small space with someone. And it turned out he was the DPL. And then I quizzed him about the release and all that kind of stuff. And so the new release is called Squeeze. And one of the funny things I thought was he was telling me they've run out of names from the original Toy Story film, because all of the Debian releases are named after Toy Story characters. Obviously, we've had Woody and Sarge and all those kind of things. And apparently the only character left that they haven't used in the original Toy Story is the car, which is called Buggy. And they don't want to release Debian Buggy because it won't look very good. So they're going to move on to Toy Story 2 and some of the other, I think even Toy Story 3 now. But I thought that was quite hilarious. The idea of Debian Buggy would be quite funny. But yeah, it's Debian, the new version's out now. I had a good chat with some of the Debian guys, and you can always spot them at any conference because they're the guys with the hairy legs and the kilts.
That DebConf they had in Scotland had a huge impact on the Debian community, reintroducing the tartan kilt as acceptable day wear for free software developers.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly did. I mean, in case anyone who doesn't know, the Debian, when they had DebConf in Edinburgh a while ago up in Scotland, somebody, I can't remember who exactly it was, so you have to forgive me for not giving them credit, decided to get a Debian tartan made, which you can have your own tartan made up. In some of the shops up there. So they had their own Debian tartan made, and then of course all of the Debian developers decided to buy kilts. It was kind of like a standard thing. They were all going to wear these Debian kilts. And I believe that the tartan actually has the name Debian encoded into it somehow. It's not binary. I forget the name of the code. There's some code in the pattern of the tartan which actually it has some significance to Debian, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at the web page for that up on the Tartan Register, and it does indeed show that the white lines are arranged to spell out Debian in Morse code with the with the correct 1-to-3 ratio of dots to dashes. And then the red in the tartan is the Debian swirl, they've got yellow, black, and white in there for tux as well. So it's actually a deeply symbolic and meaningful tartan. And I was actually at that DebConf, and I almost wished that I had splashed out the incredibly large amount of money involved in getting a kilt. Almost.
Right. How much are the kilts, Ben, just out of interest?
I seem to remember them being in the couple of £100 range, which always seemed to me a bit steep for a length of fabric. But, of course, I live as far from Scotland as you can get and still be British, so...
That's true. You're on the south coast down there, yeah. So that was quite interesting. I had a chat with the Debian guys, and I was pleased to see that they've actually overhauled their website now and made it, dragged it into the 21st century. I was on record as a bit of a critic of the way it looked before. It was very, very basic. But, it did a good job for them. But I was talking to B-Dale about this. He was saying it'll take him a little while to get used to the new design. They've got some funky graphics on there, and Zach was telling me one of the big efforts they had made was to get the download link directly on the front page and things like that. So they're trying to kind of improve their branding and graphics and things as well, which is cool.
So any other stands that caught your eyes? We should say about the way FOSDEM works is FOSDEM is held on the campus of the Free University in Brussels, ULB. And the way to think about FOSDEM is it's like a gathering of user groups rather than like a traditional conference. So each project has got a developer room that they have applied for. And then the all of the hallways between the lecture theatres where each of the dev rooms are being held are filled with tables that are covered with hardware, with T-shirts, CDs being given away, members of communities desperately trying to either recruit passers-by or more likely sell them trinkets and trash of some kind. So was there anything in particular that struck you on any of those tables, Dan?
The huge life-size stuffed camel struck me on the pearl table. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I actually missed that. I saw all the pearl books, but I missed out on the camel.
Right, yeah, they had a, well, I say life-size, it probably wasn't life-size. I may be exaggerating that in hindsight, but certainly a very, very large cuddly toy camel, which I actually sent a message to Randall about because I thought he'd appreciate that, being a Pearl guy that he is. So I sent him a quick message about that. And unfortunately, I didn't send him a picture. I should have snapped a picture. But yeah, that was certainly eye-catching as far as the stands go. And on the Open Sue's stand, they kept trying to ply me with beer, which obviously caught my eye. They had something called, what was it called now? Old Toad or...
Yeah, it's a very interesting graphic. It was called Old Toad, and it was a toad with a curly lizard tail, which was an interesting mutation.
Yeah, and I was talking to some of the guys there, and apparently the beer is actually brewed right near the SUSE headquarters in Germany, and it's got an open source recipe, they tell me. I don't know if it's quite the same as the Open Beer Project, which you can find on Wikipedia and other places, which is an open source beer. And with, you know, you can patch it with things for you know, additional ingredients and things. You can submit a patch and stuff. But yeah, it sounds quite cool. And they've actually got it brewed for them special. And they were selling the bottles for €1. So I think that was creating a lot of right. interest. And that's quite an interesting ploy to get people to your stand. Sell beer for €1. I've noticed that does get people to your stand.
Wasn't free beer, though.
No, it wasn't free as in beer, no. No, but I believe apparently... It was free as in speech, so they tell me anyway, which is an interesting irony.
So we ought to talk about beer, I suppose, briefly, because that is a big feature of FOSDEM. Did you go to the beer event on the Friday evening? Because there was the traditional opening beer event down at Café Delirium in the center of Brussels, which seemed to me to be an impenetrable mob of people drinking cheap beer, as far as I could see.
Mm. Yeah, there was a lot of people in there, and I think I arrived slightly later on. But yeah, it was quite an interesting party. I mean, they had three different levels, three different floors to that place, and it was still full. And there's lots of geeks everywhere, which was pretty interesting. I'm not an expert on beer, I'm afraid. That's not my area. Yeah, it's more to do with my co-host on Linux Outlaws, Fab. He's a German, so he obviously understands beer a little better than I. But I did quite enjoy it. I got some funny looks from people when I attempted to order a Guinness because I noticed Guinness was on the menu, and obviously you're not supposed to do that when you're in Brussels.
No, I don't. I think that's there's probably a statute against doing that up there. So did you go in any other dev rooms? We covered at the beginning of the discussion the Java dev room and the LibreOffice room. Any others that you ducked into?
I'm trying to think now. I some of the Lightning talks definitely caught my attention in the main halls by the entrance. A mutual friend of ours, in fact, Laura Tchaikovsky, gave a very interesting Lightning talk about getting open source software adoption into UK government specifically, but I presume this could be expanded into other governments around the world, and she's doing some interesting stuff about that now with a company. I think it's pronounced Seriously, is it, the company she's with now? I forget now. It's written in lolcat.
Serious.
There
Serious,
we go. Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah. She gave a great talk on that, and she was very nervous at first as well. So I wanted to make sure I went and gave her some support. But yeah, there was also lots of interesting talks, and one that caught my eye was by a lady called Ginger Coons, who's Canadian, and she's the editor of the Libre Graphics magazine, which is an interesting project. They're trying to promote the use of open source tools for professional graphic design and things like that, which is quite cool. And she gave it was very eye-catching because we had all the standard bog standard presentations, few screens, a few words on a black and white screen and stuff. And then she came along and it was just like an explosion of color. And she had all of her design stuff going on, which was very cool. And we actually caught an interview with her later for Linux Outlaws. But she's they're up on, I think, the third edition of the magazine is due out soon, and the plan is to hopefully get it into major distribution in, you know, shops and things. And it's very cool, very high production value to it. It looks like a very professional magazine, and she was giving them away free, but you can subscribe as well. And if you're interested and you want to have a look, it's LibraGraphicsMag.com is the address you need to go and look at, or just do a search for Libra Graphics Magazine. But yeah, I thought it was quite cool to see someone promoting the cultural side of that as well, and freedom in art and Creative Commons and stuff. I mean, very appropriate because you've got your Creative Commons symbol just above your head there on the wall.
So there was actually another very interesting Lightning Talk in the Lightning Talks room. It turns out that the European Parliament has a free software user group, and they had a Lightning Talk at lunchtime on Sunday to try and get some public enthusiasm surrounding that user group, that they hope that by having a free software user group actually within the European Parliament, they'll be able to overcome some of the bias from quite a lot of the MEPs there against free software. I thought that was a very interesting development that was unturfed. A nice side effect of having it in Brussels, having research assistants from MEPs come along.
Yeah, I spoke to a few people who worked at the European Parliament. As you say, as you'd expect in Brussels, there were a lot of them around, and it was interesting. A lot of them seemed dismayed about the lack of free and open source software use within the European Parliament. They were talking about things like Outlook, being stuck with Outlook for mail, which happens in a lot of companies, obviously, and other things as well, like not being able to use things like Firefox or Chrome or, you know, other open source web browsers, and the kind of the mandate of Internet Explorer, which was interesting. I mean, I think it would be really good if they could, definitely increase the adoption of open source software, and hopefully that'll be a good way to do it, to actually have a user group for people in that area. So one of the other things that I did at FOSDEM is I caught up with the Fedora project leader, Jared Smith, who's the current Fedora project leader, and we talked about upcoming developments in Fedora and you know, things that are going to happen there. And also, I had a little play with GNOME 3, which is interesting. They had it on a touchscreen, and you could play with the GNOME shell, which is this new UI. They're calling it a new desktop paradigm, which sounds like marketing speak, but to be fair, it is very, very much a cool development. And it's a new interface which will go on top of the GNOME desktop, and GNOME 3 due to ship hopefully sometime not too far into this year. So it was quite interesting to play with that. And one funny thing that came out of that was on the OpenSUSE stand, we were talking about touchscreen interfaces because they had large touchscreens there, and they were saying that they're not allowed to call it a multi-touch interface because Apple owns a patent for multi-touch, which I thought was very interesting. And at the moment, they haven't implemented it in OpenSUSE because obviously the worry of the patent threat and so on. But one thing they were talking about they might actually be able to do in future to get around the patent is not refer to two fingers being used to control the system, because apparently the Apple patent refers to specifically two fingers being used to control an interface. So one of the guys was telling me they've managed to get it to work with two sausages, and they're going to call it a multi-sausage interface, which I thought was quite impressive. So you know, you may be able to see OpenSUSE with patented, multi-sausage interface soon, which was quite cool.
Come with pork inside, like an Intel Inside sticker. Yeah. I can just imagine that.
It could do, yeah. Although if your PC is anything like mine and you don't clean the fans out often enough, you might end up with cooked sausages before too long. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so lots of interesting stuff going on. I thought the one thing I had to give them credit for is the quality of the network in wireless and stuff at FOSDEM. I think Cisco actually shipped some of their latest kit and installed it. There were huge antennas everywhere, and impressive when you've got, as you say, like 3 to 4,000 geeks, each of them probably with two or three devices on them that need that were trying to get on the wireless. They managed to keep it up pretty well.
So there was an interesting dimension to that, though. They were advertising about how they had IPv6 on the wireless network at Fosdem, but there wasn't actually an IPv6 DNS anywhere. So one of the problems that I had in one of the rooms was that it had been configured so that the IP pool on IPv4 ran out really early, and I couldn't get an IP address on IPv4 on DHCP. And to my great surprise, that meant I couldn't get on the internet on IPv6 because the DNS was only available on IPv4. And one of the problems we're going to face as IPv6 becomes more common is we need to get some people running IPv6 DNS out there because there just isn't one. If you go look at the Google DNS, even that Google DNS doesn't have an IPv6 DNS. So it's all very well having a connection, but there's no way to use it.
Yeah, that's very surprising. I mean, I know IPv6 has taken some time to take off, if you could even say that it has really taken off yet. It's still kind of finding its feet. But as you say, until we get more DNS providers out there, it's going to be very difficult for people to do that. But it is a very cool idea, being able to have a unique address out on the internet for every machine in your house without having to, you know, without having to buy a domain name for each one and so on, which is very cool. So so I think we should probably wrap up the Fosdem talk. But overall, I thought it was a very, very interesting event, and it was great to see that so many people there celebrating free and open source software, and so many interesting conversations going on. It's not every event you can go to where you can stand outside a bar and just randomly overhear two guys next to you. Their favorite Vim command or something like that. It's definitely a unique experience that people should go and check out if they can. Yep. So moving on then, let's talk about what we've got coming up on Floss Weekly. So we have next week we have Tornado Plug Project, or the Tornado Plug Project, I should say, which is an awesome, very small form factor Linux server, which it comes on a unit that you just plug into the wall, hence the name Tornado Plug, and you can plug it in and you can run it as a web server or a file server. It's got USB connections, so you can plug in more storage or anything else really. It's USB, so that's very cool. So I can't wait to talk to them about that next week. On February the 23rd, Randall will be back from his travels, and he'll be joined by Jeremy Carbo, I should say, from Sunlight Labs, which should be very interesting. And following that, we've got lots more cool stuff coming up, so stay tuned. If you go and have a look at twit.tv/floss, you can see there's a link on there to the upcoming guests spreadsheet, and you can have a look and see who we've got on the slate to appear on the show, and who's coming up. And if you think there's someone absent from there that you'd like to see on there, a project that you want to see on Floss Weekly, then the best thing you can do is have the project leader email Randall. Randall's address is merlin@stonehenge.com. And it's Merlyn, to spell Merlin, at stonehenge.com. And he'll go right to the top of the list. He'll put them right to the top of the list because we always put shows that the email us, sorry, shows, projects that email us right to the top of the list, which is cool. So if you want to have a look at that, see who's coming up, maybe suggest some things, that would be very cool. I'll be back on the 9th of March in the hot seat, in the host's hot seat, I should say. But between then, we've got some cool stuff coming up, and you may hear me as a co-host as well in future. In the meantime, if you want to find out anything more about myself, you can go to danlynch.org, which is where all my stuff resides. You can find out more about Linux Outlaws, which is the open source and free open source software news podcast that I do, and you can find that at linuxoutlaws.com. and also you can find Rat Hole Radio, which is a music show that I do where I try and focus on independent culture and creative commons and stuff like that, which this week features an interview with MC Frontalot, which some of you nerdcore geeks might appreciate. He's a legend in the nerdcore scene. So I was actually trying to explain nerdcore to Tom Marble and B. Delgarby. Trying to explain MC Hawking was quite funny in that kind of company. So go and check that out. It's at ratholeradio.org as well. In the meantime, as I say, you can find me on Twitter. My handle and Identica, of course. The handle is Method Dan. That's the two words together, Method and Dan. And there's all kinds of stuff going on. So, Simon, where can we find out more about what you're up to?
If you go visit my website on webbing.com, you'll find everything you need to know about me. Coming up in my future, I'm going to be spending a lot of time at home over the next month, and then off to San Francisco in mid-March, where I hope we're going to be able to have an OSI fundraiser. And I would also love to have everybody visit the company that I work for, ForgeRock.com, and buy their identity management from us. And I'd love people to read my column on Computer World UK, which you can all find linked from that URL down there, webmink.com.
Very cool, very cool. So thank you very much for helping me fill in this show, Simon, and apologies for the lack of our guest today, dropping out at the last minute, but it did give us a chance to discuss our memories of FOSDEM, which is always good.
Yeah, well, this is the problem with dealing with secure operating systems. It's sometimes very hard to actually log into them, and that's probably the problem our guest was having.
Maybe he's off to reset his password. So thank you again, Simon. We'll see you next time for another Floss Weekly.